Good morning. I'm Tiffany Anton from the Biz Foundry. You're listening to Local Matters, and I have Kosta Yepifantsev from Home Caregivers in today. Hi, Kosta.
Hey, how are you?
I got that name and everything.
You did, and I'm very impressed.
I mean, I've been practicing. But so you are the CEO of Home Caregivers.
I am.
Here in the Upper Cumberland.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what Home Caregivers is.
Sure. So we are a home health care company that focuses on providing services to the elderly, the physically disabled, the cognitively disabled, and also a separate population, which are the intellectual and developmentally disabled. So we provide a wide array of services. Most people would identify the services that we provide with other companies in this area, where we go into people's homes and take care of them a few hours a day. What makes Home Caregivers different, however, is that we do a lot of community living, where you have a house in the middle of the community, people pass by them all the time, and three individuals share that home. So it's affordable housing, it's access to 24-hour care because we provide staff in the home 24 hours a day, and they can still remain connected to their community, not have to be warehoused in a facility like a nursing home or an assisted living, and they can receive that 24-hour care. And, you know, if, for example, if they have Alzheimer's or dementia, some type of, you know, supervision or companionship that's necessary to provide them with a safe environment.
So this seems like a very heavy business to run. There's a lot, I would imagine. You see some emotional situations,
yeah,
working with this kind of community. What led you to this point? What made you want to be doing Home Caregivers?
Yeah, for sure. So a little background on Home Caregivers. It was started in 2002 by my wife's dad, Jim Easley. So he was kind of the catalyst. He used to do a lot of tax return and volunteering at the Senior Citizen Center. And so he had a passion for working with individuals that were elderly, and also supporting them in various endeavors, because the world's constantly changing. And he sort of was the conduit between, you know, what they could do on their own and obviously what he could provide. So he took that and he applied it into a business environment. Like I said, he started sending caregivers into people's homes, taking care of them a few hours a day. And what he noticed was that it was extremely difficult for people to afford the services that he was providing, because it's one person taking care of another. And so over time, he transitioned into TennCare, which is the only payer for long-term care in the
insurance provider kind
correct.
Of thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. TennCare is Medicaid, yeah. And Medicaid, mm-hmm, is the only actual payer for long-term care, unless you have long-term care insurance. So a lot of people make the mistake and think that Medicare will pay for long-term care, but it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It only pays for, you know, up to 120 days episodically, right? So he would transition to TennCare, which is an insurance company. And then we came in because he was planning on retiring and he was thinking about selling the business. And so he said, you know, would you like to work with us, with me for 2 years? And then if you don't mess up,
you know, no pressure from the father-in-law.
Right, exactly. If you don't mess up, then you have an opportunity to, I'll give you an opportunity to buy this business. Fair market value, of course, because he also has two other kids. But regardless, we worked with him from 2012, moved to Cookeville. You know, we had a house in Nashville. We had two dogs. You know, we were like, all right, you know, we were both working in different careers, and he provided us this chance. And we were like, all right, well, let's sell the house. You know, we just built it a year and a half ago, but that's fine. We moved to Cookeville in 2012, worked until 2014 with Jim, and then we purchased the business in January of 2015. And one of the things that engaged me the most, obviously seeing people being able to continue to stay connected to their community and provide the necessary supports to them so that they're safe, that they're cared for, that they have a high quality of life is important to me. But I really enjoyed running a business. So we have 200 employees that are in the field caring for individuals. We have 27 administrative staff that work either in our office or from home. And when we bought the business, we had maybe a third of that. Mm-hmm. So I was engaged in how many people can I serve? How many people can I employ? You know, how do I measure the profit and loss and the balance sheet? All those things were just so exciting.
You just said words that people, a lot of business people are like, that profit, they don't want to look at the numbers. They don't like to, they're passionate about what their, the trade is, sure, and not the business aspect.
Yeah.
And so that kind of sets you apart as a business owner, is that you love that business aspect of things.
Yeah. I mean, I make decisions from the back end, because if you only look at things from an operational standpoint, you get caught in what you feel, mm-hmm, as opposed to what makes sense. So you're using your heart instead of your brain, and you have to use your heart, of course, in a lot of aspects. But if you're going to be making long-term decisions based off trends and forecasting, you're going to have to look at, you know, what's most profitable, what's you know, where do I need to focus my attention to improve conditions? And also, what are the market trends? Like, what's the industry doing? And, you know, how do I adapt to it so that, you know, when I get hit with a pandemic or a labor shortage or, you know, the state of Tennessee decides to cut rates, how do I absorb that? And how do I pivot from that?
Yeah. In case you're just joining us, we have Costa, CEO of Home Caregivers Inn. And so what were you doing in Nashville at that time? Did you have a background in insurance or medical or any owning a business?
Yeah. So when I was 19 years old, it was 2009, and I decided to work at a car dealership, Land Rover Nashville. It was in Brentwood, Tennessee. I got an interview from a friend through a friend through a friend, as it normally happens. And it was a really great experience because there were six salespeople. So it wasn't like a traditional car dealership where you have like 25 salespeople, 15 sales managers. You got constant turnover. People are, you know, disjointed. This was a very intimate environment, very family oriented. It was a family owned business. And what it taught me specifically was I started my real world work career in the middle of the Great Recession. So, you know, everybody's running around with their hair on fire and they're, you know, trying to dump all these, you know, big vehicles that are, you know, depreciating in value month after month. You know, we're talking like Hummers, you know, companies were going bankrupt. And the only way that that I could sell cars or understand how to sell cars was to understand the decision-making process. It wasn't just the fact that somebody was going to buy a car and so you had to sell it. It was also, how do I get this deal bought? And so there was a lot of collaboration, especially because it was such a small and intimate environment. There was so much collaboration between salespeople, the one finance manager that we had, the one sales manager that we had, the one general manager that we had. And so you're having to work together to sell cars, value a trade, and also, you know, put that forward to a bank so that they approved a loan. Very great. And then you could see as the years progressed how the economy changed and how things became easier, more fluid, credit was easier to find. And so just that whole environment, that career was really kind of my catalyst to falling in love with business.
With just business in general. Was that your plan? What was 10-year-old Costa?
Sure.
What was the plan for 10-year-old?
Yeah, so I was playing hockey. And I get hyper-focused on things, obviously. I'm sure people listening can sort of see that.
The family members are like, yeah.
Yeah. I was playing ice hockey, and I started when I was 8 years old, and that was my primary focus. I did that every weekend. I practiced three times a week on the ice. I practiced every day after school, and I did that from the time I was probably 9 till the time I was 18. So I moved around, lived with host families, played on different teams. So I lived in Nashville, lived in Tulsa, Oklahoma, lived in Fort Worth, Texas, Colorado Springs, you know.
So
everywhere.
At 10 years old, you were going to be in the NHL.
Yeah, that was my goal. Yeah, I just wanted to make it to the NHL.
Yeah. So at what point did you kind of pivot and think maybe that's not going to be the plan?
So when I was in Oklahoma, I was a senior in high school, and I got traded from my team in Tulsa to a team in Texas, in Fort Worth. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, like, okay, I have to go to high school, and then I have to go to practice afterwards, and I have games every weekend, or, you know, throughout the week. And so I can't get a job. And I have to keep asking my parents for money. And unfortunately, because this is junior, so this is 20 and under. So this is like right before you make the pivot to like semi-pro or college, which I didn't get great grades. So I doubt that I was going to get a college scholarship for hockey or academic. But I realized, like, I'm tired of asking people for money. Like, I'm tired of relying on my parents to sort of, you know, pave the way for me. So I was like, I'm going to go to the real world. And once I went there, I realized, like,
this is kind of fun, too.
Yeah, and it's actually a lot easier than highly competitive sports, to be quite honest.
We'll be back in a minute.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. OfficeMart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. OfficeMart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at OfficeMart.
Welcome back. I'm Tiffany Anton from the Biz Foundry. I have Costa, the CEO of Home Caregivers, in this morning. And so at some point you realize, okay, I got to grow up, quit playing hockey. And you decide, and that's when you got a job kind of working selling cars.
Sure. Yeah.
And at the time, you did not finish high school.
No, I didn't.
So you decided this money thing is worthwhile. So what was going on then?
What did you do? When I realized that I wasn't going to the show, for all you hockey and also baseball fans out there, I thought, okay, so let's make a pivot. I was a senior in high school and I hated school. Like, I absolutely hated going to school, sitting in class.
The formal education part of things.
I didn't hate learning.
Yeah.
I just wanted to learn things that were actually going to be applicable to what I wanted to accomplish in life. And so when I got my very first job, it was a temporary, like, 6 month, you know, job at Radio Shack at Cool Springs Mall. And I didn't have a high school degree because I had dropped out of high school. This was 2008. And I essentially was like, OK, well, I'm going to have to find like a certificate or something. And that was what led me to
a GED. I'm
going
to have to find Amazon and see if I can buy one.
Yeah.
So you decided to go and finish a GED.
Yeah, I did.
Just because it's a
requirement to employment. So if you don't finish high school, you might as well get a GED And, you know, honestly, it's interesting because a lot of people think that you have to have a high school degree, but, and I'm not necessarily knocking high school degrees, so don't get me for that. So I got my GED, went to work at Radio Shack, realized that pretty much everybody was asleep at the wheel compared to this highly competitive environment that I had playing hockey. And I was like, okay, great. So I will go find a better job, network. Mm-hmm. And that's when I got my job at Land Rover, and GED worked fine. Mm-hmm. They didn't, they didn't say, oh, well, you don't have a high school degree. They said, great, you have a GED. Congrats. And then I applied for the University of Alabama online, a program called Bama by Distance. And they said, no, you can't get in because you have a GED and you should probably go to a community college first. And I said, wait. Just give me a chance, like mm-hmm. one semester before you say no. And they were like, oh, okay. So I went to the University of Alabama and did about 2.5 years online and got a lot of school knocked out. So major four-year university, all with a GED. And by the time, so then I started working with Jim, things got crazy. I had to put school on pause. But I went to Tennessee Tech with a GED. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I understand what the importance of an education, but I think all people's goals are different. I don't think it's all in one box.
I completely agree. And I was a high school teacher for 5 years. So, I think that seems a little weird to come from education to think, no, not everybody has to fit in that same, box that society tells you need to fit in. Mm-hmm. But being scrappy and saying, no, you're going to let me in, even though you think I should go to a community college and I'm going to prove you wrong. I think that competitive spirit, there's actually a lot of studies out there that kids who play sports mm-hmm. can kind of, they have more grit than kids who don't. And so that really instills a lot into you. The other thing I want to point out is that you mentioned earlier, you employ almost 250 people in the Upper Cumberland, mm-hmm. which is probably one of the bigger company. I mean, for a small business, the definition of small business is under 500 employees, but you could get to a non-small business in 10 years, with your GED and you're going to get a degree now just because that's what you probably feel like you should. Well, but I think you're almost a Cinderella story in my eyes.
Thank you. Thank you. I really do appreciate that. I just grew up with a kind of can-do attitude. My parents and I moved to the United States when I was 5 years old from Russia.
What? With the name?
Yeah, that's where the name comes from. We were Russian immigrants, and it was 1994. I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, and they were both chemists, and so when they came to the United States, and I was thinking about this question a lot on the way over here, and so when they came to the United States, they just kind of hit the ground running, and so there wasn't any like, oh, I need to find myself or, focus on my enlightenment. It was like, no, you're in America, you got the American dream, that's the objective, you got to make money, let's go work, right? So that was my application to pretty much everything that I did in my life because they were working all the time. So it was my purpose to like find something that I'm passionate about, find something that I value. And so I applied that to everything else that I do. And with regards to home caregivers and the work that we do, first off, we weren't always this size. Mm-hmm. It took about, I've been doing this for a decade now. It really started to pick up the last 4 years. Believe it or not, the pandemic, because of the types of services that we provide, really did help us because a lot of people were like, wait, nursing home equals potential death. I'm not going to send my loved ones there. And so they had to really think of new and abstract ways to provide care. And obviously home care is one of those things. So on that note, it's been a ever-changing, ever-evolving, can-do, never-quit type of endeavor. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, coming from sports. I think it comes from being an immigrant. I think
I'm just sure that the environment in your home, you know, your parents just kind of, you know, I can't imagine everybody, every immigrant has that same attitude of, right, you know, let's just go. It's time to go. We're here. Let's go. And so I think that there is something special about parents that instill that in their kids and that you've been able to do that. Do you think you're that kind of dad as well?
Yes, maybe a little bit more like softer. I take a bit of a softer approach than my dad did.
I think we all do. I think we all like kind of soften up, you know, over the years.
So. Yeah, I've got four kids. They're all, you know, 7 and under. I've got a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 3, and a 2-year-old. And the last two are Irish twins, so they're 10 months apart.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I know. So I try to parent them all the same.
Yeah.
But they are very, very different, and they're personalities, their emotions, what they're good at. But I do tell all of them, you know, to have that grit, you know, to not quit and stuff like that.
I think that some of it is just being the example. As a parent, I think you just have to do the things that you know are right, and then the way you want to show your kids, because showing them is going to, you know, instill way more than telling them. Yeah. And so I think that's what I do with my girls, is I kind of just show, live my life, and they see how I do it. And they're like, yeah, my daughter said, I want to be an entrepreneur. And I'm like, do you know what that is? No, I don't know what that is, but you talk about it all the time.
Yeah, that's what mommy is.
Yeah. So they just, that's what they think. So, yeah. What do you think? So we talked a little bit about the amount of jobs that you have created. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what that means for the economy of this area.
Sure.
Thanks for sticking with us. I'm Tiffany Anton from the Biz Foundry. I have Costa here from Home Caregivers. You are the CEO. And we just talked a little bit about the fact that you've created so many jobs here, and I love to see, you know, kind of the growth in the future. But there's a huge economic impact that means for businesses or for this area. So tell me what that means.
Sure. So obviously employing 250 people, approximately 250 people, is not just creating jobs, but it's also, you know, giving other businesses an opportunity to sell goods to those individuals, providing housing, you know, just it is the lifeblood of an economy, you know, the mm-hmm. small businesses and the jobs that they create. I will say one of the things that we focus on and that we try and champion at Home Caregivers is how can we continuously raise their wages so that they can have a middle class lifestyle? Mm-hmm. And then how can they use that opportunity to then transition to an upper middle class lifestyle? So, you know, obviously the long-term care industry is so expensive. There really isn't a private market because most people can't afford it. So everything is funded by state and federal funds, which means that they get to set the rates that they believe is adequate. And so what we can pay our employees is based off of those rates. But I will say that creating 250 jobs that, you know, pay anywhere between $12 and $15 an hour on average is still pretty substantial for, you know, otherwise not having those opportunities.
Those jobs. And that, mm-hmm. and this is all insurance money that is coming to this area. And so it is a huge plug for money coming into the Upper Cumberland.
Right.
One other thing I wanted to talk about before we run out of time. You also, in the last year, decided to start a podcast.
I did.
Better Together. Check it out. You've interviewed me.
Yep.
You interview kind of the big players in the community. But what made you decide to throw something else into the ring of things?
So I had a fear of public speaking. So that was one of the things that I have been working on with bated breath for years. Mm-hmm. So that was the original, like, the original thought was like, how can I improve public speaking? And so as I did my research, there is various ways of talking without having to like book a venue and an event. And that includes podcasts and that includes YouTube videos. And so I thought, okay, well, if I did create a podcast like Better Together, which is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Go subscribe, leave a review.
Right. I thought, okay, well, what are we going to talk about? You know, is this going to be a regional podcast? Is this going to be a state podcast, a national podcast? And so I thought, wouldn't it be great to have people on that make impacts in their local communities and start there and really try to understand what makes people tick, not just from a business standpoint, but also like from a life standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. So it's amazing because through the pandemic, so many people have had to change how they operate their businesses. So many people have had to change their outlook on life. And so listening to people's stories as they navigate these very different times has been, it's been transformational for me. I hope it's been transformational for the people that listen. But then secondly, on top of that, I thought, okay, well, let's start a YouTube channel about long-term care and let's start to bring awareness to the industry so that we could hopefully get people to understand that, you know, this is an unaffordable service for a lot of people and they have to use public funds to be able to care for elderly individuals that are disabled, right, for a long period of time. And so being on video also made me sort of improve how I communicate and, you know, kind of the cliche, like, what do you do with your hands type thing, yeah. You know? So
there's no video here, so nobody right. can see, nobody knows. So how do you think it's gone for you? How sure. is it?
It's improved considerably since the very first day that I started the podcast. My first interview was like, we tried to do a group podcast that failed miserably. Then we started interviewing people one-on-one, and the amount of sweat that I produced was very impressive, actually. And I just, you know, I just didn't know what to expect. I kept fumbling over my words, but I think it's gone pretty well. Last month we had 850 downloads on the podcast.
Yeah.
We've interviewed people on very emotional topics, mm-hmm. Which I didn't expect to do. I thought it was going to be very like matter of fact, you know, like financials, you know, what do you want your kids to accomplish in life?
Yeah. Black and white issues. Yeah. And it's, yeah.
There's a lot of emotion. I mean, people really want to, they discussed some pretty heavy topics.
One of the last ones that I've seen come up was somebody who does wedding planning, mm-hmm. and going through a divorce in a wedding planning industry.
Yeah.
And just topics like that where it's like, I think that you really get to the heart of what people are going through. What if you could have people who are listening who have elderly members in their family, mm-hmm. what is one thing that you want them to know about home caregivers or just the opportunities that are available to them?
Sure. So speaking on the opportunities, I need to stress the fact that Medicare does not cover long-term care and that there is no public benefit that just automatically is available to you for long-term care. That is not the case. And so far, nothing has come to fruition that will require it to be the case. Secondly, the only payer for long-term care in the state of Tennessee is TennCare. TennCare, the way to qualify for it is you have to have assets of, I think it's under like $2,000. And if you own your home or any assets, you have to spend those assets down or write them over to the state to be able to qualify for TennCare. Mm. If you decide to move your assets out of your name into somebody else's name, then there's a 5-year look back period, which means that you'll have to wait 5 years before you can apply for TennCare and qualify. So unless you plan on paying for out-of-pocket care, or paying for care out of pocket, which, I mean, if you consider the math, for 4 hours of care, $20 an hour, because you're paying for a human being, you know, and that's obviously going to be expensive. That's $80 a day for just 4 hours, which is like a minimum amount of care. It's probably for three meals and maybe some help around the house. That's $400 a week. Median household income is like $60,000 in the United States. That's household. So most people can't afford to pay a third of their income on long-term care, especially if you're on a fixed income. So the point that I'm trying to make and what I'm alluding to is, if you are under the age of 50 or 55, if you want to stretch it, you need to go get long-term care insurance. You need to go and get a plan that's going to pay a daily premium so that you don't have to rely on a third party, your family, the state, to be in control of the direction that your services are given. Otherwise, what ends up happening is you lose your autonomy and your family tries to take care of you, but it's hard to care for an individual, especially if you have a full-time job and kids, and you end up going to a nursing home. And that's the worst thing that you could possibly do.
Yeah. So if people want to get in touch with you and all the things that you're doing in our community, how can people find you?
Yeah. So for home caregivers, if you have questions about long-term care or the services that we provide, you can email Costa, that's K-O-S-T-A, at homecaregiverstn.com. And if you want to get in touch about the podcast or if you have some interesting information that you want to share, you can email us at Costa, K-O-S-T-A, at Costa Yepifontsev. I should probably spell that.
Yeah, go
it's
ahead.
It's Yepifantsev.com.
All right. And are you on LinkedIn? Can people search you on LinkedIn?
We're on Instagram.
Instagram. Okay. People can find you on Instagram. Better Together is the podcast. What do you see in 5 years from now? Where what are you, Costa, going to be doing?
Wow. Okay. So my kids will be 12 and under. So that's number one. 5 years, you know, to dream big.
Yeah, sure.
I'd love to go to get my master's degree at like Columbia or Harvard. That'd be really cool.
The kid that says he doesn't like education, formal education.
I know, but I'm 30 now.
Yeah. The kid that says he didn't want to, dropped out of high school, got a GED, and he wants to get a master's at an Ivy League school. Right. I like it. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
You think you'll still be with Home Caregivers in 5 years?
I think so.
Five,
yeah.
10 years? Yeah. Do you think you'll have grown it into a bigger, even bigger?
I think so. We have a really good team. We have 25 people in administration. That have all been in the industry for a very long time, and they are focused on expansion. They're focused on going statewide. Right now, we're just in the Upper Cumberland. They're focused on going multi-state, and they have the tools to do it. So they have this can-do attitude. I guess all employees, all people that you work with, are an extension of yourself, and so they are able to you know, get through a pandemic and be better off than they started. I have no doubt that they're going to be able to get through whatever comes next and continue to grow this business and continue to build their own careers as well.
Well, so. I'm so glad to have you in the Upper Cumberland and what you infuse into this area. I look forward to seeing where you go, how
sure.
Better Together develops, and how Home Caregivers really instills more into this community. I love seeing what you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being here today.